Welcome back, Survivor fans. This is episode 11 of season 26, Survivor Karamoan, Fans vs. Favorites. I am Ralph with your co-host Chris, and we're not totally sure what we're going to talk about today.
I don't even know what the point of talking is.
Oh, you're really bummed out about this week's episode.
There's no point. I can't go. I mean, I apologize in advance, listeners. I may just completely mail it in the rest of the season here.
The good news is there's only three more podcasts after tonight, so you won't really have to drag it out. Plus, we're trying to prepare a little surprise for the finale podcast.
It's a surprise for me.
Well, no, we've talked about it. We might actually deliver on our promise of bringing...
Oh, potting nude?
As opposed to the other ways we pod?
Well, topless is not nude.
No, we're like actually bringing in the people from the green room to actually appear on the show before we actually wrap things up.
So. Oh, right, yeah. Matt Damon and everybody.
Matt Damon and crew.
Yeah, okay. That would be cool.
That would be cool. Hopefully we can.
It'll be good because I'm not gonna have much to say for the next three episodes. So we're gonna need somebody to get in here and fill some air.
So in case you're one of those weirdos who only listens to the pod and not actually watches the show, which I think we actually do have some. I don't know.
It's distinctly plausible. We do enough tangential conversations that we could actually. I mean, they would have to be friends of ours. I don't know how the heck you could listen, but still, like I might get. I think we might get a periodic listen from Evan. He's not watching the show. He listened to an episode a season ago or so and was.
He enjoyed it.
He enjoyed it. He's like. Yeah. But he's like, you spend like a 30-year time talking about Survivor.
Right.
Victor texted me today. By the way, I started on a Victor tangent at the beginning of the last podcast, and I got as far as Victor texted me. Victor and I had a text conversation. And then we went off on a tangent. We never came back.
Right.
But he was texting me today because he was listening to last week's pod. And he was commenting on how, like, he said so many tangents in podcast 10. It truly is your trademark. He said, in minute 6, you began to say you'd discuss something with me, then went on a tangent, never came back.
Right.
And he said, the best part is at the end of the podcast, Ralph says, Victor will be glad that we didn't really go off on any tangents today. And I tried to defend you. I said, I'm sure he was being sarcastic. He's like, no, he was serious, and you actually tried to refute him.
Well, maybe in my head I had put more tangents planned than we had time for. So
right. It's
maybe
true.
It was a travesty that we had ended in an hour and 1 minute or whatever it was.
Something like that, yeah.
But I was going to say, if you're one of those weirdos who doesn't watch the show but listen to our podcast, Malcolm went home. And Malcolm is not only Chris's horse, but the guy that I've said bears a reasonable, you know.
A passing resemblance. Very passing resemblance.
In that they're both tall and white.
Especially if you're looking the other way when you're passing.
Yeah, especially with the facial hair, like then it's completely lost. And you've never had long hair in your life, I don't think.
In high school, I had like the bowl cut.
I think I've seen pictures
so
of that.
I've seen like
part
so
down
I've,
the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've had that kind of length. And actually, when I was in grad school, version 1.0.
Yeah, 1.0.
I grew it out again to the point where I had like just enough that I could do like the Beckham, you know, with like the double ponytail back there, like the one up high and the one down low. You remember back when Beckham had the long hair?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an interesting look.
Yeah. I mean, anything to get myself in the same sentence as him, I guess.
Or Malcolm, apparently. And he should go down as a great contestant, and I would not be upset to see him back for a third go somewhere down the line.
Yep.
I'm sure CBS is already engineering.
Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling he's their new Russell. The thing they got to be careful about is, I mean, I shouldn't say be careful about burning him out. One more season is pretty much all you can get out of a player. I mean, I think there's only one player who's ever played four times. And that's Boston Rob, right?
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's the only guy who's played four times.
So you played his season, All-Stars, his Heroes, All-Stars, Villains, and then the rematch?
And then the, yeah, and then Redemption versus, Redemption Island, okay. AKA, let's figure out a way to get Rob $1 million.
Someone on Twitter was calling Philip Boston Philip, which I think is cute.
Was it?
I don't know. It's kind of bent, especially with the events of the past week.
Yeah, little, I know. It seems
it's
like
a little bent.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Bent. I like that. I barely remember what happened. I think I've tried to like
from this episode
wipe this episode from my memory because
there was an
so,
auction. I don't know if you're.
That's right. Yeah, we had the auction. Yeah, that was good. That was enjoyable.
Was it?
I mean. Actually, well...
The formula is there. Like, there will be something at the end that everyone will share in, so you don't have to worry about not eating, because you will eat something with the group.
Yeah, that's true. They've gotten really formulaic. There's one person who's going to get put to a decision about, do you want the thing you bought, or are you going to take rice and beans for the whole tribe?
Uh-huh. And that decision is a no... Like, you cannot win. You can't win that decision.
No, you can.
No, you can't.
There is a right decision, and it's taking the rice and beans.
No, because then it's like, oh, well, she's popular with everyone else because she did this great thing, so I can't take her to the finals.
I think this happens deep enough.
Or not deep enough.
I'm saying deep enough, like the remaining cast is deep enough. There's enough people left that I don't think it's that big a deal. Mm. Yeah, I love how Malcolm's strategy lasted him all of one item, where he bids the $20
right away,
right off the bat on the first item. Although, to be fair, he probably got the best deal out of the lot.
What, he got the beer and the peanuts?
He got the beer and pretzels. Okay. Peanuts would have been better, though, at least in terms of, like, nourishment, protein, exactly. And it wasn't just one beer, it was, what, three beers, I think, right?
Yeah. But that's what I understand. It's like you got like here's beer and peanuts, and all of a sudden there's like here's a bucket too. Like
yeah,
all of a sudden they're throwing an extra.
The thing I don't get is like
they should get them drunk more often. Like he should have given him a six pack and let him just get his buzz on.
First person to bid $20 gets a keg.
No, a six pack at this point that you
that's true. That's
in,
true.
In the hour it takes to do that auction,
I mean,
you'd be rolling.
A dose of NyQuil might do it with these guys now, especially yeah. like Cochran and some of the mousier girls,
the lightweights. Yeah.
I don't understand why it hasn't become like standard issue, or the standard protocol, I should say. That when the person who gets put to the decision of like the thing you bought or get the food for the tribe, that they're not automatically like the rest of the tribe lets that person bid $20 on the next hidden item.
Hmm.
You know? Like that should be, you know, it's like in soccer. You know, someone mm-hmm. goes down for the injury, you got the drop ball, and mm-hmm. the other team doesn't even send somebody to the drop ball.
Or no, they just boot it out of
the actually no, the other way around, sorry. The team that benefited from the thing is the only one who sends someone to the drop ball, and they just kick it down to the other end of the field and lets their back line bring it up.
Right.
Like that sort of gentleman's agreement needs to enter.
Yeah.
Come into Survivor.
Well, maybe we've started the discussion, Chris. Maybe,
I hope so.
Maybe now people will understand what should be done, what the right thing is. I love it. I think mm-hmm. it's great.
Yeah.
Especially if it's sheep brains.
Oh, that was rough. That was rough.
Like, that storyline couldn't have set up better for CBS.
Oh, between her, like...
Her breakdown.
She waffles on a previous item, right? Where she gets out
Well, it was Andrea's with the rice and the beans thing. So she would have come out of that with Jack anyways.
That still might have been better, though. At least you don't, like... At least
it's better
that
than
way.
Sheep than pig's brains.
What's that?
It's better than pig's brains.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I'd rather have no food than have
pig's brains
in front of me and have to decide whether or not I want to act. Like, I don't want to have that choice. I'd rather not have that choice.
I wonder how much she ate of it.
Like, I'll give you $20 to take away this choice from me, Jeff.
How do you feel about Jeff giving the pizza to Sherry?
Oh, on her bid there?
Yeah, which should never have happened.
What do you mean it should never have happened?
Cochran was wrong about his Monty Python problem strategy.
You meant Monty Hall.
Monty Hall. Oh, my God.
He is wrong, because there was no reveal.
There was no reveal.
Right.
Right.
I noticed that, too.
If he had revealed the...
He was right if he had revealed one.
The rotten coconut.
Mm-hmm. Then you're supposed to switch. That's also...
He reveals that it's pizza. The one slice of pizza. And then he says you have...
Well, the one slice of pizza was the thing he originally bought.
Right. So they should have shown what he got.
But you never do that. You never do that. That's not how it works.
Oh, that's right. That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. There's a number of things that were failed on qualifying for this to be the Monty Hall problem. One,
there's no curtains.
You needed to know in the first place that there were two duds and one real prize. Two, you needed when you made your choice, you needed the host to take one of the two that you didn't choose and reveal a dud prize, and then you are supposed to make the switch because it gives you twice as good a chance of winning the good prize as it does if you stick with your original.
You know, the best explanation I ever heard for that problem was, instead of the three doors, when you're trying to explain this problem, explain to someone as give them a deck of 52 cards and tell them to pick the ace of spades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they choose their card, you set it aside.
Mm-hmm.
And then you show them 50 of the other 51 cards, and you say, would you like the card that you chose, or this one that's left over?
That is a good way to explain it, because I like that in general. I mean, anytime I'm thinking of, I teach math, so I'm talking about, a true-false statement about geometry or whether or not something's true in algebra. I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but in general, anytime you're trying to assess whether or not a statement is true, you should attempt to exploit the things that are given you. Make it dramatic, you know? Like if they just say a triangle and you don't have a diagram when you draw a triangle, don't draw an equilateral triangle. Don't draw an isosceles right triangle. Don't draw the most special triangle you can think of. Draw the least special triangle. Draw the triangle that there are no names for. Okay?
That's good.
If they're being liberal about their description, you want to go to the limits of that description and abuse that. You know?
So we've gone to the limits using the deck of cards, I guess.
Exactly, by making it now load 52 up. Doors instead of just three doors. With three doors, it's easy to get lost in that math because the numbers seem like they're all really close. You know, better yet, make it the lottery. You know, here are 174 million combinations that are not the right one here. Do you want to stick with the one you got or this other one?
This is the only one left.
Exactly.
All right.
I love that problem, and I love that. It's funny how many people are non-believers with that problem.
Right. They're like, oh no, it's probability. Like you have an equal chance.
Yeah. They're convinced it's 50-50. Or, a favorite one of mine is, I remember when I was in grad school, again, take one, I had a class that was it was for math teachers. And the guy teaching it was talking about doing probability and odds and stuff like that in class. And he said he once met somebody who was, I don't think a math professor or anything like that, but was mathematically inclined, an economics professor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Who claimed that he believed that buying two tickets to the lottery does not cut your chances in half.
You mean improve your chances?
Improve your chance by double, whatever you want to call it, yeah. Double your chances, yeah, sorry. The odds against you cut in half, that's what I meant. It's mixing my terminology. He believed that let's say for simplicity's sake that it was a one in 1,000 chance that you would win. He believed that if you buy two tickets, you now just have a one in 999 chance of winning, because when you buy those two tickets, it's not
one of them's going to be a loser.
You're guaranteed that one's a loser, so all you've done is eliminate one loser, And yet again, the great way to explain that this was totally incorrect was to say, if you buy 999 tickets by this guy's,
you're gonna win.
Like the odds that you win are insanely good. But by this guy's logic, you just have a 50% chance of winning because you've eliminated 998 losers. So now it's down to a 1-in-2 shot. Like, you clearly do not have a 50% chance of winning. You have a much better than 50% chance of winning.
Right. That's a good way to put it. All right. Anyway. So you came here for the math lesson.
Exactly. All right. Free lesson. Write that down.
What exactly was Brenda breaking down about? Just the difficulty of being out there and protein deprived. And
I mean, it's so funny. This is like, is it even the same person? Like, she is so far removed from the Nicaragua. Was it Nicaragua? Yeah, Nicaragua.
If she had played this way the first time, we never would have seen her again, and nor would we have cared.
Right. I completely agree. Well, the superficial males among us. Superficial heterosexual males among us.
There's a token 3 or 4 pretty faces on the girls' side every season.
Yeah, but every one of the other ones went home early.
But I'm saying, like,
anyway,
she would have been just another one of those pretty faces. That's all. No one's clamoring for.
Yeah, she's been a dud.
Was there a Whitney? There was a Whitney one time.
Yeah, Cochran season. There was Whitney, and there was. It's like 4 letters.
Sorry.
Can't remember.
This is the game everyone loves.
She had like a Pacific.
Ralph and Chris try to remember old survivors' names.
Yeah, she had like a Pacific Islander-ish type look. I feel like.
Is that supposed to elicit my sympathies? Pac Islander.
No. Because Whitney was like friends with like she broke up a marriage or something, didn't she? She was friends with the guy who had like the giant compass tattoo.
Yes, Keith.
Keith, thank you.
Keith.
They
were both married.
Oh, all right. Well, then I guess they mutually broke up marriages. not that that makes it better or worse or anything.
It's a shame about that letters from home thing, although that's becoming part of the formula, too.
The letters from home people aren't leaving
money for the letters from home.
Yeah. Yeah. So what? 3 of them.
Sherry.
I was surprised there. Yeah. 2
of the people who definitely would have wanted them, the mothers, Sherry and Dawn,
and Malcolm. It was Malcolm because Malcolm said he's like, I'm not a crier, but I'm feeling the same way they are.
Cochran was crying.
Was he? Yeah, that's right. Later on, when he was reading
Cochran
his,
Cochran was crying.
Yeah, that's right. I was sort of surprised that there was no attempt. Maybe there was, and they just didn't bother airing it. That there was no attempt by somebody to try to, like, bargain with Jeff to buy the letters for the other 3.
He said he can't share money.
Yeah, but, I mean, we saw Sherry got to buy the rest of that pizza, mm-hmm. right? Like it's the Wild West out there. It's no holds barred, and you can make an offer, right? I mean, the worst he can do is say no. Like, he's not going to kick you out of the game for it. So I was surprised that somebody didn't speak up and offer to pay like especially somebody who had gotten some food already but still had like a couple hundred bucks left. Like, I'll give the rest of my money so the 3 of them can have their letters or something like that. Mm. You know, that's like 200 bucks less they don't have to spend next season. You know, they can recycle the money now.
I see what you did there.
There was I lost my train of thought. There was something else I wanted to say about this, and I can't remember.
The auction.
Oh, okay. So first off, what the heck was Eddie doing?
Yeah.
Is it just me, or did Eddie have his head up his ass the whole time?
No, we definitely were giving Eddie a lot of crap while we were watching that episode.
Holy cow! Like, speak up.
Right.
Like, Malcolm bids on the thing. Like, who? Cochran bid. Did Eddie even bid on the thing that Cochran won?
No.
Like.
Yeah.
What are you saving your money for?
Right.
Does he need to get his transmission fixed on his car too?
Yeah, I made that crack too at the end. Oh, trying to get the car fixed.
Yeah, $500. I don't remember who that was.
It was Ralph.
Oh, was it Ralph?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I'm very strongly.
I thought it was an older man who said who had stuck held on to the money. I feel fairly confident that it was an older man who had held on to the money.
How far back are we going? South Pacific? Redemption Island?
I'll do a little Google search here. Vamp for a little bit while I while I hit Google to see what we got.
All right. So, the immunity challenge. We've seen it before, and Cochran gets the advantage. Actually, we're jumping ahead of something. We're jumping ahead of Malcolm trying to use his clue.
And the Mexican standoff.
The Mexican standoff.
Was it a Mexican standoff?
I don't know.
No, but what is a Mexican standoff?
That's when three people are holding guns all at each other.
Like, oh.
I'm pointing a gun at Chris, Chris is pointing a gun at Jonas, and Jonas is pointing a gun at me.
What makes that a Mexican standoff?
Because we're all pointing guns at each other.
And again, I don't know how that makes it a Mexican standoff, but sure.
It has nothing to do with the people of Mexico. It has nothing to do with the country. It's just that's the name it's been given.
All right. Like a Chinese fire drill or...
Correct.
You know what a Chinese fire drill
is? I do know what a Chinese fire drill is.
Does that have some sort
of... Don't think it has any roots of the people of the country of China.
Yeah.
It's one of those general
terms.
Some
sort of racist undertones.
Right,
that's why
that's what I'm trying to be careful here.
Yeah.
Being a little sensitive.
I mean, who knows? Maybe the Mexican standoff, that could have some undertones, too, that we're not aware of. We should be careful.
Let's tread lightly. Okay.
All right.
So, yeah. Given that situation, I'm not sure why Malcolm felt like he had no option of digging for it. If it was me, here's what I do. I grab Eddie and Reynolds, and I say, guys, I can tell you where it is, and we're all going to dig there together. We're just going to box out. And if it's and as long as it's in this spot, we'll be fine. But at least we have three people kind of digging in one place instead of them kind of digging in with me in that same location. I think if you have three people digging that spot, there's really no room for any interference.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking the exact same thing. He dropped the ball there.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't dig, you definitely don't get immunity. If you do dig, there's a chance you get immunity. Yes, there's a chance she walks away with immunity, but her walking away with the immunity idol is basically the same thing as nobody walking away with the immunity idol.
Yeah.
I agree. Because you know you are a major target.
And last time he had no problems pulling out in front of him. Like, hey, look what I got.
Exactly, yeah. The only difference between that time and this time is that he had information that the others didn't have, and he was too worried about them finding out.
As if they didn't all conclude that what he knew was the location of the immunity idol.
Well, I mean, what I mean is them figuring out what the clue, where the clue is leading him. Which, I mean, all he needed to do is just dig in a bunch of different places. Some of them right, some of them wrong. At least then you're throwing them somewhat off the scent. They're going to be thinking you're doing exactly that on purpose. So then it just becomes a guessing game for them about which one is the one that's actually where we should be looking.
Like maybe you send Eddie and Reynolds to a different dig with location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't think that works. I think if you're going to do this shadow game, you're shadowing Malcolm.
That's what I'm saying. You put Reynolds on the spot, and then you lead them off on a wild chase. And
are you kidding me? No.
Oh, so you don't want to have someone else have it.
Yeah. Malcolm needs that idol. He wants that idol. Like, he doesn't want Reynolds to have that idol.
That's fair.
Sherry had it right. I mean, they were cocky about it. And it almost... who knows? I feel like it might
have... Cocky about the idols?
Cocky about it all. And I feel like...
But that was their selling point. That was their pitch.
And I could be wrong. But it seemed like it had a chance of working.
Of pulling Sherry?
Or Eric. But they did exactly what she said they were going to do. It's like, we're winning immunity challenges, we're going to find idols, we got this.
But do you think her mind was changed by the fact that they didn't win the immunity challenge, or...
That probably helped.
I'm sure it did.
That probably helped.
It's hard to pitch, we're going to have all the immunities when you don't win the immunity.
Right. Indeed. Cochran. Two immunity challenges.
I just like that he's really pimping his dominance as an individual immunity player, having won 50% of all the individual immunities this season.
That was a major advantage there.
It was.
To have that knot, to not have it hanging lower.
He played it exactly correctly.
Oh, I mean, that was a duh. Like, you do it the second you can.
I think
play
I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but when he did, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. And then, like, I was like,
oh, yeah.
You don't wait and tire yourself out until later.
No,
you,
yeah, like, exactly.
Make it as easy as humanly possible.
Uh-huh, exactly.
But that's yeah.
Yeah. So close for Eddie, too.
I don't think it was that close.
You don't think so?
No.
Close in that he was second. But
does that make it close, though? Cochran was there another 10 minutes.
Yeah, probably. You're right. I mean, that knot made all the difference in the world.
Yes.
You're right.
Mechanical advantage.
It's funny because at the point that it got down to the two of them, there was a moment they showed a shot of Eddie, and it kind of looked like he was just chilling.
Chilling.
It kind of looked like he had it. Like, I am cool. I am good to go. And then, of course, like, at that exact moment, he starts losing it and slipping. And you're pretty much done. Were they allowed to switch hands?
Yeah.
That was kind of...
Not during the challenge.
But, like, between rounds.
Between rounds, they could switch.
Yeah. That was...
I had no problem with that.
Yeah. It just seemed like that was not what he was indicating when he was telling them to get set up. It was like, pick your hand. Like, it made it sound like there was a lot of gravity to it, like, because this is the only one you're using for the rest of the challenge. If you're allowed to switch after each round, who cares which hand you pick?
Right.
I mean, I guess...
You want to strategize so you end with your dominant hand.
You do. But, ultimately, I don't think that's a big difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
I so thought Malcolm was going to pull it out. I so thought he was going to go back
and find
it. What,
on the immunity challenge? Or
No. Go back and find the Hindi mate. Like, he says he's got her shadowing him. He's got her shadowing him like a hawk, but, like, I don't know. I saw a lot of scenes where he's, like, off talking to people.
Right. She's off talking to people.
Like, in the woods. Like, he somehow managed to have a private conversation with Sherry. Like... If he's having a private conversation with Sherry, he can go look for the idol. Without...
To what degree... And I know this is kind of tainted by knowing the results, but to what degree do you think Phillips leaving has destabilized the group? I mean, obviously the voting went their way, but do you think it has destabilized at all from what it was? Or did it strengthen?
No, I mean, what's funny is... I can't help but wonder, like, I was thinking about this week. Did Malcolm make the wrong move giving Eddie the idol last week? Like, should he made it have just made it all about himself and held on to it? He plays the one for himself. Eddie goes home.
And then he plays it again this week.
He plays it again this week if he has to. Because I kind of feel like... I mean, Philip was very much like
as fun as it was,
big brother, and like he was keeping people in line, probably more so. Like, I mean, and again, we've seen a little bit of a tease to next week. It seems like Pareto efficiency is about to kick in.
Right. Well, again, they also teased us last week that Sherry was going to flip.
True,
and that didn't happen. So,
but
here's my thing.
But 7-on-2 is even more likely to kick in, and so he might have had even a better chance.
As cool as it was that he did that, and it was freaking cool.
Mm-hmm.
All it did was mark him as the guy who's going to make the big moves. And for everyone left, that's the guy you don't want to be next to.
True.
So, unless your big moves guarantee your place in the final three, mm-hmm. or two, whatever it is, you're making your move too early. So, I agree with you. If it meant his survival, I'd have played the one without giving it to Eddie, said goodbye to Eddie, and then the next week played my own, maybe say goodbye to Reynolds, but then it's him and six people that want to...
Right. Or if Reynolds can pull off immunity, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. or if Malcolm can pull off immunity.
And who knows, maybe having played it that week, he doesn't have to play it again,
mm-hmm.
because he's shown that he's willing to play it. He can hold it in reserve. You know, kind of...
Flash the second one, but not actually...
No, not even flash it. I guess that would be the point of flashing it. Anyway,
yeah, you'd have to flash it.
Sometimes I talk and get ahead of myself, Chris.
Sorry.
It happens.
By the way, I was not able to figure out who the Survivor contestant was that didn't spend their money and saved it for fixing their car. Maybe I should add that to my search. Fix car. Yeah. Still nothing. Do we have much else to talk about?
It was a dark moment when I saw the last Malcolm boat, because it was like, this is the guy you didn't want to see go.
Yeah, I know. Did you feel that way yourself, or
he's enjoyable to watch. He's not unpleasant to listen to. He's not completely full of himself. He's confident, but he's not like...
He's easy on the eyes.
I'm sorry my eye rolling doesn't translate through the airwaves, but... compared to having Sherry and Eric and Brenda around, I'd rather have Malcolm around.
Eric explaining on day 30. So this is how you want it. You want to be the one who gets to make the decision and knows all the information. What an impressive breakdown by a guy who's on like day 50, maybe 60 of his Survivor career. Sherry is convinced she's the one running the game.
Someone mentioned the whole fact that he may be spooked from having played with girls before and getting burned and hop over there.
Yeah.
And that would be a reasonable reason. Plus, he flipped his vote to Philip last time.
I actually really thought he was going to flip again this time, because it felt like he was giving such a heavy sell when they had the four of them talking about the vote, and like Andrea's like, you got a vote, and he's like, I mean,
it was Don. Don was on.
This is Ralph nodding, by the way.
Yeah, Don was really on him. Like, I'm trusting you.
Well, I thought it was Andrea, but you could be right.
Yeah, and Eric's like, yeah, I'm totally in. He's not playing it cool at all.
Yeah, he was crazy overselling.
But again, we have the advantage of knowledge.
What? No, at that moment. Because it was not an oversell, because there was nothing to be selling. He was actually going to vote with them, or at least he did end up voting.
No, I think he was undecided.
Yeah, I guess maybe, yeah. But yeah, at that moment, I was just like, wow, that is a gross oversell. I was convinced he was going to vote with the guys. Or, this was for you, Victor, the Beefcake Lions.
Whoa.
Victor gave me a hard time about how frequently I use Beefcake Lions, and he feels like it is to me as the gay is to Corinne.
Okay.
You
haven't talked about how much you like a beefcake.
How much I like a beefcake?
Yeah.
Or maybe he didn't say that. I thought he had said that. Somebody said, oh, there it is. Yeah, he says, you sure like to see a Beefcake Alliance a lot, making me cringe a la Corinne and the gay.
Well, Chris... What's our social media presence?
Yeah,
like?
Wow, this is just...
That's all right.
They it's can't such a bad win. Podcast.
You know, we talked about Jonas and I traded a few texts before the episode. He's like bold prediction, nobody flips, you know, one of the Bro Alliance goes home, or one of the three Migos goes home. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's the least bold prediction you could possibly make.
Yeah.
he's like, it's still bold. I'm like, no. I'm like...
It's not bold.
And then my roommate Schrader asked me if... who I thought was going home. He correctly predicted that Philip was going home last episode.
Really?
He did.
Wow.
And I think he said Andrea or Dawn was going home. Can't remember which.
No.
But I said Malcolm's going home.
Yeah.
And that was my pick beforehand. So.
Yeah.
Any of you who know Brian Schrader, you can confirm with him that I was truthful.
Which is pretty much everybody, seeing as the only people who listen to this podcast are friends.
Close friends. Thanks. We love all of you. Okay. So let's put a fork in it.
Well, our Twitter handle is at Tribal Podcast. Our email address is podcast@tc.banby.net. And our web presence is tc.banby.net. That's where you can find the RSS feed. Download all our episodes going all the way back to Survivor Redemption Island, back when we were called The Merge.
Right, yeah. You can really catch the highlights, like me mispronouncing finale.
Right. Oh, wow.
So, until next
time. Usually I'm the one getting that jab in.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the other side.